How you doing, Richard Green? With me in the studio, I'm Jonathan Friedman. Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. Richard Green from Panther Investment Properties. How are you, Richard?
I'm very well, Jonathan. Thanks for having me again. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you.
So what's going on in the world of real estate investment?
Well, real estate continues to be sort of one of those asset classes that is looking more and more attractive. Sort of it's in the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king. We've had some issues in the bond market recently, a lot of volatility in the stock market. But real estate has continued its sort of strong performance and creating value. And therefore, what happens when that happens is money finds a way into that asset class. So single-family homes, recently sales of those of homes dipped a little bit, but generally it's been on an uptrend.
And is that both new and existing? I heard the other day a story about existing homes.
It was primarily existing, yes, right.
So is that the consumer marketplace? Consumers who are in the marketplace are looking for new, want updates, want upgraded?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of it has to do with consumer confidence, and a lot of it has to do with household net worth. So we had a fairly rough January in the stock market where we were down 11% at one point in the S&P. So when people feel a little bit less wealthy, they put their things on the back burner. Plus also, again, even though we've had a mild winter, we're not really in the prime home buying season until the spring, at least in the Northeast right. and several parts of the country there.
So that's not a seasonally adjusted dip, though.
It's
year over year.
Yes, yes, and yes. You know, Jonathan, one of the criteria that we think that was put into place for the benefit of protecting consumers and institutions has been in the need for increased credit quality. And last March, there were sort of additional upticks in terms of the minimum FICO score and the minute sort of credit quality scores that a lender wanted to see. And sometimes at the margin, that can, you combine that with, so you need higher credit quality, but you see higher prices too because of the strength in the market.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily
so some people out
work.
On the cusp.
Between both criteria as far as that, both metrics. So, you know, we're focused primarily at Panther on multifamily properties. We focus primarily in the Southeast, but in generally, you know, you look at what the what rents have done in certainly the major metro areas. They've escalated to the point where there's a fair amount of actually sort of governmental concern that their affordable housing is right. becoming less and less affordable.
Well, it's been an interesting topic even for the presidential campaign,
right.
Looking at affordable housing.
Right,
know, what is the definition of affordable?
Right,
seems to be a disconnect between, cost of housing and, average incomes in this country.
Well, you talk about wages. Yeah. That's one of the contributors. We were talking to some people just last week that while the real estate boom in the 2001 to 2007 before the bust was explosive and had the perception of creating a lot of wealth, the rate of change on the upside to real estate far exceeded wage growth. You know, wage growth is sort of usually in that 2 to 3% type of thing. And so it was viewed, the excitement behind real estate was, you know, you can add to your net worth meaningfully if you just, with other people's money, you know, get some mortgages, stretch a little bit and whether you flip it or whether you want to invest in it, they're creating more wealth that way than sort of any other way they'd experienced until obviously the day of reckoning came in and, mortgage rates, interest rates went up and the economy softened and people lost jobs.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. I guess one of the things you guys must look at is rates of absorption and new developments and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You travel to virtually almost any market, I think, large market in this country, and there's cranes going up everywhere, multi-unit residential, and people are moving back to the cities. There seems to be development, certainly in this city, as well as many others, a lot of development in the downtown core.
Yes, yes.
So who's going to absorb all these units? is it overseas investors? Is it empty nesters?
The hipsters, the millennial, who like to live near where they work, and there's you know, on a relative basis, you know, even in Boston, although it's quite expensive, they consider affordable at sort of $400,000 condos, which, you know,
shoebox,
which more than I paid for my first home in Newton, you know, 20 odd years ago. That's going to be to be determined, okay? Because you're right. I view Boston, though, as a little bit of a aberration, because I consider a lot of the development pent-up demand. Under the prior mayor, Mayor Menino, there was a lot of hurdles in terms of getting any development done.
Yep.
And 2-3 years ago, it finally started to break free. So I think finally, you know,
so a lot of that's driven by, as you said, the
it's been pent up. We haven't added a lot of apartment units or multifamily or commercial construction in Boston for a long time. So,
But it seems as though one of the challenges, and I guess, you know, whether suburbia's challenge is this, is that it seems as though people are moving laterally. So you move out of a, you know, home that's appreciated greatly over the years, and you move into a condo that's got this, you know, same price tag.
And Jonathan, you know, my generation, I'm a few years older than you, but I would echo those sentiments, and that is a bit of a conundrum. Sort of, what's the definition of downsizing?
Right.
You know, it's not on a from a market price. It's relative to how much room you go from 4,000 to 1,500 square feet, but it still costs you a considerable amount of your money.
Less service. You don't have to hire the gardener. And
yes.
You
yeah,
know,
I assume
get a doorman. You trade in the gardener for a doorman.
Yeah, right? That's what sort of the equation that they're banking on. Doesn't personally appeal to my family, my lifestyle, but I do know people who have been doing it, driving demand. But I will tell you, one of the trends as we're looking forward in multifamily that people haven't talked that much about it is that it's not, we talked about sort of the millennials who had to, during the recession, move back in with the folks, and then they created about 2 million, like a pent-up demand for 2 million new household formations as they get jobs and sort of want to move out on their own type of thing. But it's anticipated that over the next 10 years, there's going to be millions of baby boomers, people in their 60s to 70s who basically say they don't want to sell a house that they've taken a lifetime to pay off and downsize to just get something smaller. At the same price point. So they're moving to lower cost regions. You know, the Southeast as well as the Midwest is one. But they also want a simpler lifestyle. They don't want to take care of the yard and do these things. Mm-hmm. So there's an expectation that the class, there'll be a class of renters, of older renters, not that typical 23 to 35 years old, 3 year old. It'll be, you know, 62, 63, on forward. Empty nesters who just. And
we're not talking about the spectrum of any sort of independent living communities.
No,
we're not talking, you know, retirement.
No, active, because how these communities, at least the Class A communities, have evolved is, you look at some of the clubhouses look like you belong to a country club. The amenities are first class. There's dog parks. There's outdoor patios with outdoor kitchens. They're pet friendly. I went to one of our properties in Orlando in January. The gym.
Who wouldn't want to live there, right?
Exactly. The gym is worthy of a $100 a month membership anywhere you go. It was really first class.
So that's what we're seeing in the marketplace.
We're putting a golf simulator in.
Wow. So demand for services really and
is driving it.
Competition.
But then it allows for people, you know, our age to consider the option, who would never. Not necessarily consider renting type of things. So that is sort of a change in the equation a little bit and a driver that people haven't spoken about quite a bit. But I can see it happening because it's really, you know, stress-free.
So will we see a move to more multifamily developments of that nature, you know, Class A developments in suburban areas, in urban areas,
yes,
perhaps?
Yeah. Well, certainly the suburban area, depending upon where you are. But there is also the sort of, you might call it the arbitrage between wherever you are, the metro area versus sort of a little bit out in the suburbs. Just for example, and again, this isn't a commercial. We're building a property in Tampa. Now, there's a lot Tampa's thriving. Mm-hmm. It's a lot going on there.
Other than their baseball stadium that they can't fill.
That's true. That's true. Fortunately, we're not in that business. But one of the sort of better well-known portfolio managers in Boston who worked for Fidelity, Jeff Vinnick, is been the lead developer on $1.5 billion waterfront property. In there, it's hospitals, it's museums, it's quite extensive. It's going to be what they call one of the green cities. It's very walkable.
Mm. So it's almost like an urban area within an urban area.
Absolutely. And his partner is a gentleman from Cascade Capital named Bill Gates. So their financing is pretty much intact. Mm. But we're building 20 miles north of that, of the city. And we're part of a master plan community that was developed by the Heinz Corporation. Heinz, yep, for people in Boston, is well known because they were the architects of the Seaport area. Mm-hmm. So the difference of the cost of land, trying to be in that urban down there, versus in the urban in the more suburban area, is significant. And the reality is, as the waterfront development continues to expand and grow, create job growth, but those people may not necessarily be able to afford to live downtown as much as they would like to. Mm-hmm. So, like we do here in all cities, you compromise and you have a 30-minute commute to your work and back and forth, but you have all the amenities in a suburban environment. You're not quite as convenient to the city, but sometimes cities aren't as attractive to those with families or pets or mm-hmm. those types of things.
Well, that's interesting. So, I mean, it seems that, you know, along with the demographic shift, is that shift in terms of demand mm-hmm. and types of units that people are looking for.
Right,
and,
right.
And as you said, you know, you have millennials who are looking to stay in the urban environment.
Correct.
Perhaps raise their kids in the urban environment, and it's an easy transition to those types of units mm-hmm. where the kids go.
Well, people have, you know, raised questions about the supply. There is a lot of construction. It's not abnormally high. It's going back to sort of a normal trend of about 300,000 additional units a year. But you have
to. Is that on a national basis?
On a national. 300,000? 300,000 to 400,000. But we have to take into mind again, you've got sort of a driver of demand is the older population, not just mm-hmm. the younger population. You have younger people with student debt who can speak to the affordability. But the interesting thing is the majority of those new capacity in units is in major metro areas. Mm. That's where the large pension funds and institutions feel comfortable, being in a San Francisco, being in New York, being in Boston, being in LA. And they're not as concerned about, they think there's a diversity of employment, of different types of
that
jobs,
the units
school,
will be absorbed somehow or
that
another.
They'll be absorbed even if there are mm. sort of, you know, ebbs and flows to it. But that provides great opportunity in other areas of the country where you do have manufacturing growth, you have service growth, sort of, and that's, you know, Southeast Texas, Houston right now. Austin's been a big driver of growth.
Is it the economy, or is it, you know, the general macro economy, or is it the building of these units coming online? I had heard that there was some downward pressure on high end homes, in general, that there's mm-hmm. less demand, price drop.
They're
sitting longer.
Okay,
on
a relative basis.
Going on a relative basis,
right,
they seem to
be
sitting longer.
Well, it's interesting to say that because, and I don't know if they targeted which price level. It might actually be in my briefcase. There was an article in the Boston Globe said that people who are trying to enter the housing market are getting, this was Sunday's Globe, mm. getting frustrated because they've offered, there's premiums. Again, we might be right. talking about a segment of the market, yep. not the seven-figure plus market, but certainly the people who want to enter the market in the greater Boston area in the 300 to 400,000.
Can you get into the market in Boston?
that's what is frustrating people yeah. because they've offered 5%, 10% premiums, and they're going for above that for that home. So, the high end homes, I can't really.
I was referring more to the higher end. You know, the seven figure, the mm-hmm. $2 and $3 million mm-hmm. homes mm-hmm. that seem to be, at least, merely anecdotal, but looking at houses that have signs in front of them and they seem to sit there for months. I know in my own particular case, I have a neighbor who's had their house on the market for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, maybe it's a function of price point or, you know,
the homes. It's interesting. It's sort of like it's the market price, you know, whatever the market will bear. So
for everything, there's a buyer. The question is when.
Is when. Exactly. That's right. Let's see what else is happening in the multifamily marketplace. Our lead lending agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, are very focused on housing. Obviously, they're the largest lenders, and they do quarterly surveys to sort of register the satisfaction of renters. And you know, one of the things that Panther strives to do is there are these satisfaction. It's sort of like a TripAdvisor, mm-hmm. whatever it's
customer
called.
Satisfaction scores.
Yes, yes.
Satisfaction index.
Right. And several of our properties have actually won awards for the being in the top 1% of resident satisfaction. So this keeps, it's like everything else. You have to stay on your toes.
Yep.
You know, it's almost like the great equalizer, right? If I have a bad experience, it goes on social media, mm-hmm. and it has a way of biting you in the rear end, going back. So it's provided, again, another contributor for a better quality of life in these communities, because the likelihood of a satisfied resident extending their lease is multiple times somebody who is not happy. Type of thing.
And is it a very different overall demographic than it was a decade or two decades ago in terms of the renter?
Yeah, it is.
What you said earlier sounds like it's
more family, more with children. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the drivers. You have a demand for two bedrooms, three bedrooms. Not, I haven't seen that explode off the charts, but all complexes have three bedrooms. If we have another minute, I'll just tell you an interesting phenomenon that is happening in, I know for example in Arizona and some communities out there where real estate is not as expensive, is that they're building sort of detached single family home/apartments.
Hmm.
It's a 1,200 square foot with a whole apartment that is, they build a town square.
Yep.
They, you have a little piece of land. You can.
So it's a lower maintenance type thing, or does it have built-in maintenance associated with it?
Everything, it's the whole apartment lifestyle is the same, is in place. It's just you don't walk down the hall smelling somebody's jerk chicken in your neighbor's next to you type of thing.
Okay.
They built a town square, and there's about 200 of these homes in a given community,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very eager to watch how they evolve. Something like that wouldn't necessarily work where the cost of a door, a land acquisition cost, is where we are in the Northeast. But it seems if you can downsize and you don't, and the rents are $1,200 a month,
they're manageable.
They're very manageable,
right.
type of thing.
As opposed to something like that, that's $3,500 in England or
right,
what have you.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see how this one company has. They're on their fifth community.
Hmm.
They build them and they sell them to an institutional buyer. Then they go off and build, and they're
getting leased.
They're getting leased. Hmm. Yeah, because it's sort of an interesting. Trade-off, you know, you can, and
sort of a happy medium,
right.
Independent, like living in a home, but you're part of a
the phenomena
community.
When you know large institutions like Blackstone, right at the after the what we call the Great Recession, they acquired a lot of foreclosed home,
mm-hmm.
and they converted those into rental homes.
Yep.
Those the renewal rate or the resident satisfaction rate of those tends to be lower.
Mm.
Okay, and you think about that. Phenomenon. Not that they haven't probably made money on the underlying real estate, but these are people who they have a preference for home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they're renting a home and that's fine. But you don't have, maybe you don't have the amenities, but also when you have to provide maintenance over hundreds of single family homes, you don't have the the economy is a scale there. And you, one of the things on the Panther, in the Panther model is within 24 hours, there'll be a maintenance issue that will be addressed. Okay. You know, there's a lot of checks and balances to make sure that the satisfaction, as I said, was high. I just can't see how you can be that efficient when you've got thousands of homes in a given area. You know, the lawns have to be mowed, and
right.
And
it drives up those operating costs tremendously.
Right. Because you don't. Again, we talk about economy of scale. We know how many things can go wrong in owning a home, and we call Absolutely. It the money pit, as we say. So that experiment again. What's worked has been the market recovery.
Excellent. Richard Green of Panther Properties, always a pleasure to have you on, get insight into the marketplace and
pleasure,
what's happening.
Pleasure, Jonathan.
And you know, our ACE reporter and the investment, real estate investment. Tell other listeners if they want to get in touch with you, if anyone wants to reach you, what's the best way to reach you?
Our website is pantherpm.com. I can be reached at 617-733-1878. And we've got in Woburn here, we have a team of 9 professionals, and in Atlanta, we have 150 people in our management office. So we're knocking on about 4,000 to 5,000 units now. We're with our new construction underway. So we're real. We're Excellent. Not quite the mom and pop.
Oh, you guys are busy things going
yes,
on, obviously.
A lot.
Great
yeah,
stuff. Well,
great.
Always a pleasure, and look forward to having you back. And just remind our listeners, you can hear weeknights on the Radio Entrepreneurs Network. And please download our app, available on Nobex Radio, but also across all platforms. And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.